Hi, Russell Feingold. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be on. Appreciate the invitation.
Russ Feingold served 3 years as a U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. He co-sponsored the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, the McCain-Feingold Act, the only major piece of climate finance reform legislation passed into law in quite a long time. It was, of course, found unconstitutional in 2010, one of the first right-wing decisions of today's conservative Supreme Court. The case is known as Citizens United. As a senator, he was alone in voting against the USA Patriot Act. He opposed the Iraq War. He was the Senate's leading opponent of the death penalty. For the last 10 years, he's taught constitutional law and foreign policy as a visiting professor at a variety of law schools and universities. Today, he also serves as president of the American Constitution Society, an organization of law school professors, law students, and others. It's a nationwide network, includes nearly 200 student and lawyer chapters, and progressive lawyers, students, judges, scholars, elected officials, and advocates are members. Finally, he also writes 2 books and appears in lots of media. Today, we'll be discussing the current Supreme Court, the vast damage it's done, and what can be done about it. Just in the last several months, they've declared the President of the United States absolutely immune from criminal prosecution for official acts. The court also sees the responsibility and power to issue regulations like the Environmental Protection Agency standards for lead in playground soil. It's now subject to judicial adjudication and decision by the judges themselves, not the scientists. The court also ruled that would-be mass shooters can buy attachments to change their weapons into machine guns. White state legislatures can systematically remove all black people from their districts. And say about this gerrymandering, it's just politics. And to add a dose of cruelty, the court also ruled that insurrectionists who attack the Capitol and obstruct the work of Congress can be charged only with minor crimes. But homeless people sleeping on the streets, they can be sent to jail. And the justice has also rejected being bound by the ethics rules of federal government. They can still be paid handsomely for their fine decisions for our super wealthy. The list goes on. In 2012, gutting the Voting Rights Act, 2022, it overturned Roe v. Wade, and before that, they immunized police from personal liability. And then there was appointing George Bush president, stopping a full counting of the ballots. Not a very good precedent nowadays. Anyway, we can hardly examine all of these, but we can do some. So, Russ Feingold, tell us about the case Trump versus U.S., how the court came to it, what was the basis of their decision to immunize upcoming presidents from prosecution for crimes they commit.
Well, first of all, Bill, thank you so much. That's quite a parade of horribles you just read. It's one thing when you hear one of them, but when you hear them all together, it's just incredibly disturbing. And in fact, our organization, the American Constitution Society, was founded in reaction to one of the cases you mentioned, which, of course, was Bush v. Gore. All of a sudden, people woke up and realized after Bush was declared the winner in a very bogus and political decision, they realized that the court had become so politicized and partisan, you couldn't trust it in a way that we used to believe we could. And then you come to an era where, you know, long after Watergate and the famous decision denying Nixon unanimously the idea of executive privilege, you end up with a court that actually gives an absurdly extreme version of presidential immunity. This wasn't something that had built up gradually over the years as a right-wing agenda. It seems to be something that grew out of reaction to Trump and support for Trump and his trying to protect him from all the obvious criminal conduct that he was involved in, both as president and after he was president. So obviously there would be some immunity. But the way the court talked about official acts was so broad that it could potentially immunize the president from almost anything. And that we won't know for many years. We might start knowing next year, but we won't know for many years just exactly how the court will apply this standard. It's really disturbing, and many very relaxed, calm people have described it as creating basically a monarch, the very thing that the founders didn't want.
Yeah, and I've read some of the stuff that they've published in supporting it. It seems that not only has the court immunized all of his acts, they make it clear that they want him to use it for ends that were formerly seen as illegitimate, like using the Justice Department for political ends. That was, I think, it's an unwritten law that the Justice Department was not the servant of the president. It was the servant of the people. And why don't you comment on that?
That was the lesson learned from Watergate. You know, it's true that it wasn't clear, that distinction. But the lesson learned from Watergate by Gerald Ford, the president there, was that the Justice Department can't be just the lackey for the president. And so he appointed a very conservative guy, a conservative jurisprude, a president of the University of Chicago, Edward Leavy. And everybody would have thought perhaps he would be very conservative, but he insisted on creating a Justice Department that was independent from the whims of the president. And that is a 50-year tradition that is being gutted. And of course, if certain things happen in the election, it could be gutted very soon. So it's a major step backward to the era of Watergate if that happens.
So, folks, this is Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, the old mole variety hour. That variety is in the variety and the struggles from below that we cover, struggles for social justice and radical democracy. I'm Bill Resnick, talking to Russ Feingold, three-term senator from Wisconsin, now the president of the American Constitutional Society. So far, we've listed the decisions by the current court that roll back the liberatory and redistributionist legislation for near the last 100 years. For example, reversing Roe v. Wade or declaring illegitimate most of Biden's forgiveness of student debt. We then discussed one of the latest atrocious decisions, interpreting the Constitution to grant immunity to upcoming presidents for prosecutions for crimes from jaywalking to mass murder. They can do it all. Next on the mold, Russ Feingold, tell us about another atrocious decision, the reversal of the Chevron case, a power grab by the Supreme Court, taking on responsibilities that could never succeed in satisfying, but putting joy in the hearts of polluters.
Yeah, it's very hard to beat the outrageousness of the overturning of Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision. But this Chevron decision is, in your words, really one of the fantasies of the right. When I was teaching law at four different law schools across the country, the very conservative students would always mention, hey, we got to get rid of this Chevron decision. And what, of course, it means is they don't want administrative agencies to be able to do things to protect us. They don't want them to be able to act on COVID. They don't want the EPA to be able to deal with clean water issues and climate change. And so what they want to do is hamstring these agencies by not allowing them to promulgate reasonable rules and somehow wait for Congress to make impossibly detailed regulations that could never come out of Congress. I know I was there for 18 years. It's a way to try to basically bleed the federal government from its ability to protect Americans and somehow believe that state by state you can handle COVID or state by state you can handle environmental problems, which of course isn't true. You can't just do it that way. So this is possibly the worst decision. It's possibly the decision that has the greatest ramifications because it can affect every agency of the federal government. And it could seriously undermine our ability to protect ourselves.
Yeah, in reversing the Chevron decision, Chief Justice Roberts reasoned that judicial deference to agency rulemaking under Chevron was incompatible with the court's fundamental duty to interpret the law. Well, this fundamental duty to interpret the law means that, and the practical impact is that the federal courts and then the circuit and Supreme Court, they would be making all of those decisions, not the scientists. And when a corporate polluter with deep pockets can't convince the scientists who have studied this thing that, in fact, they shouldn't be corralled and fined and punished for some dangerous environmental practices.
That's exactly what they're doing.
They're putting it in the courts. And these guys, like the Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, there's very few scientists. People are at least trained in, even in science in any way possible, that can penetrate the fog that the companies can put up.
Yes, that's very well said. Let me say that, of course, that's the way they want it, too. They want to be able to just stop stuff by making it so impossible for the agencies to do it, because what they're really doing, as in the labor cases and many other cases, they're doing the bidding of the big companies and the billionaires. You can see it from who they hang out with on their private trips that they shouldn't be taking. They are the tool of the Chamber of Commerce and the very wealthy in this country, and that is one of the only consistent things that you can see, is they almost always side with the very well-to-do and big businesses. And what they really want is that these federal agencies can't do anything to them. And so they make it impossible to get, as you say, real expert help to promulgate rules through agencies. Because Congress itself, even if it wasn't corrupted, can't do it because it doesn't have the capacity to do it. You have to have an agency with people who can work with the experts, as you've said. Well, they don't want that. They just want to hand over the goodies to the big guys.
KB Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, the Old Mo Variety Hour. I'm talking to Russ Feingold, three-term senator, now the president of the American Constitution Society. So far, we've discussed the empowerment of the president to commit crimes, including murder of his critics, and empowerment of the Supreme Court over all federal regulation, and the rest of the federal courts to ignore what the Congress and scientists and the federal regulatory agencies have done, and in fact write their own laws and regulations. Next, we'll discuss the National Labor Relations Act and the National Labor Relations Board, because the billionaires, Amazon, Tesla, and Trader Joe's, are miffed that the board forced them to rehire workers they had fired for union organizing. The companies have brought suit claiming that the NLRB has amassed powers that defy the Constitution. I'm afraid at best, or maybe worst, the National Labor Relations Act and the board will survive, but toothless and impotent. What's your sense of how this came about and the possibilities of, at least in liberal administrations, enforcing labor laws?
Yeah, this is, again, part of the longtime fantasy. These big, powerful companies have never gotten over the idea that there's a legitimate labor movement in this country. And many of the decisions of the Supreme Court are incredibly hostile to labor and labor organizing directly. But also what they do is indirectly, they want to undermine the NLRB, which is crucial for working people to vindicate their rights. For years, they were trying to just not fill the seats on the NLRB under when President Obama was president as a way to try to gut it by not even filling it. But now, as you suggest, they're going after it directly and trying to delegitimize what it does. This turns back the clock almost 100 years. And it's the same thing they did with Citizens United. They, frankly, Bill, they didn't overturn McCain-Feingold. That's still the law. What they overturned was the 1907 Tillman Act, which prohibited corporations from directly giving money to campaigns. So this is part of a broader agenda to stop anything that gets in the way of a monopolistic control of our economy and our political system by corporations. So this is very disturbing. And although a lot of the attention, as it should, goes to things like the Dobbs decision and the decisions relating to guns and immunity, some of the greatest damage may occur in the context of the Chevron decision and, as you say, the attack on the NLRB.
So with all of that, the question arises, what can be done to replace the Supreme Court with a group of honest jurists?
Well, that's what we have to do.
And what's the American Constitution Society doing?
We're one of the two or three leading organizations in the country advocating what we call judicial reform. And what this is basically saying, look, the court has become politicized and biased and is really just doing political bidding and acting like a legislature. And we have to make changes to the court. And this is gaining ground. In fact, President Biden has now finally endorsed the idea of some kinds of judicial reform. We support three kinds of judicial reform. First, we believe you should add seats to the Supreme Court. That is completely legitimate. The court has been different sizes over the years, and they stole the Supreme Court. They stole the Scalia seat, and they stole the Ginsburg seat by cheating with the Senate rules. And at least those two seats should be balanced by adding seats to the Supreme Court, which can be done by legislation. The second thing, which Biden did endorse, is term limits, saying that members of the Supreme Court should only be able to serve as justices of the Supreme Court for 18 years. They can serve on lower courts beyond that. But that is something that I believe can be done by legislation. Some people think it has to be done by constitutional amendment. But in any event, it's obviously become absurd and a form of game playing to have these lifetime terms where you have somebody as sick as Justice Ginsburg trying to just hang on because of the way this system works. And it was not the way the thing should be. The third thing is we need ethics rules. These guys, they're the only judges in the country that don't have rules like this. The lower courts have to follow strict rules about gifts and trips and the like and revealing what they do. And all they do is have very mild rules with no enforcement. And it's a form of self-policing, and they don't self-police. So you have these abuses like these incredible trips being taken by Justice Thomas and Justice Alito. So we believe that Congress can and should impose regulations, ethics rules. It's long overdue. Congress has rules like that for itself. The White House has rules like that for itself. The lower courts have rules like that for themselves. The Supreme Court should have it as well. So those are all things that can be done. And depending on the outcome of the presidential election, I suspect there could be real action on this next year.
Well, what if the court just declares that's unconstitutional, maybe on the doctrine of separate spheres, and they can make a better case for that than they can for gun control, for their most of the atrocious decisions over these last years have less basis than declaring it unconstitutional to pack the court. Then you run right into a constitutional crisis.
That's right.
They're basically demanding that they not be changed in any way.
That can't be tolerated. And in fact, I would say that the term limits piece, they might have an argument, but they have no argument, constitutional argument whatsoever, to say you can't add judges to the court. It's been done many times. It's explicit in the Constitution that the Congress shall set the size of the court, and there would be no basis for that. If they did it, it would require a constitutional amendment to overturn it, and that thing could be done. The court can't declare a constitutional amendment unconstitutional, but I think they could not get away with it. They can't get away with it. So that's why I actually think the first thing they should try to do is add seats. I also think they should do term limits, but that would probably be challenged, and it would be an interesting case, and probably they would not do the right thing on that. But these are things we can do, and it, if nothing else, it puts pressure on them, like happened when Franklin Roosevelt tried to add seats to the court. He didn't succeed, but the court got nervous enough about what it was up to, you know, destroying workers' rights in this country and other than human rights, that they stopped doing some of it, and that was called the stitch in time that saved nine. So some just a mere doing this.
Yeah, just the attack may change their positions quite a bit.
That's right.
And I think we have to sign off, Russ.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Bill. It was a pleasure to be on your show. And
good talking to you, Russ.
All right, talk to you later.
So long.